Blog Talk Radio.
Art Bell has gone to bed. Rush Limbaugh won't be awake for hours. You have arrived at the Commute Faster Energy Hour. Energy. There comes a time when all good men come to realize that that disturbing hacking cough is not caused from years of smoking because they never smoked a day in their life. No, we can thank big oil, coal, and nuclear waste for polluting the air we breathe and the water we drink. But now, bringing my own experience. I'm your energy expert and host, Ken Rasmussen, occasionally called Late Night Leroy. Good evening, and welcome back to the Commute Faster Energy Hour. This is Ken Rasmussen. I'm your host, and today is Saturday, March 10, 2007, and it's 7 p.m. Pacific time here in California as we begin the program. A common acronym that you see on my energy page is MIB, stands for Men in Black. So just who are these mysterious characters? Are they some Hollywood invention like Superman or the Green Hornet? Or are they slightly more true-to-life characters like Al Capone and Elliot Ness? Well, hardly. They're a little bit worse. But we still go on to ask, are they genuine government figures from some three-letter agency? Or are they religious figures from Rome with long black robes? Or are they just hired mafia goons paid to dress like businessmen? A book was published back in the 70s titled Dress for Success. It reviewed many types of casual and serious business attire. Even though it was published during the loud green leisure suit era, it did state something that is adhered to in business in the business world even today. The most powerful business attire is a black tailored suit with white shirt and conservative tie, period. That is the top of the business attire selection of wardrobe. In my last years in aerospace, working for Lockheed, I had the privilege of working in their newest research and development facilities, working with advanced composites. And they were in the process, during the time I was there, of working with Boeing to develop the F-22, which is now called the Raptor fighter. But it was an R&D back in the late 80s. After spending literally millions in this one building on equipment and personnel and a list of doctors, PhDs that looked like a hospital, doctor this, doctor that, if you walk down the row of offices. There came a time that Lockheed wanted to show this off to the Pentagon. So I remember being at work that day with plenty of preliminary preparation, days ahead to make everything just shine like it was new. And most of it was new, so it wasn't all that difficult. Standing there at my workstation, I remember in this large room seeing the big doors swing wide open, and in came this entourage of Colin Powell, a bunch of Pentagon generals, and probably half the board of directors of Lockheed Corporation, and probably several from Boeing. Of course, the military has their own dress attire, but looking at the executives from Lockheed and Boeing, and we're talking about the top guys that day, for one thing, there was not a thread of polyester in the group, which kind of gives you an idea how bad my dress code was in those days. But the thing that really stuck in my mind was everybody was either wearing a black suit or a very dark gray suit. That's what the big guys wear in business. So it gives the impression that you are serious about what you're saying and that you have a corporation behind you. Now, even though this is supposed to be a call-in talk show to share opinions, this show is to share facts, not opinions, because opinions are like armpits. Everyone has at least two, and if you don't freshen them up daily with a shower of information, they become pretty stagnant and offensive to everyone around you. I have no patience for anyone who justifies criminal activity by brushing off everything as, oh, just a conspiracy theory. Those who do set themselves up for eventual destruction by the same powers that they deny exist. It's time they freshen up their stale opinions with some facts. A warning heeded is the best investment advice that anyone can share with you. So what I'm going to do this evening is start by playing three clips from other talk shows, which I fortunately had my recorder going, where you will get to hear from the inventors themselves describing what experience they went through. Now, I know most of my listeners are quite familiar with my experience. It's been written up. Sterling Allen did a very accurate report on it. And if you've never heard of my experience with the MIBs, with the product development team that I was working on, just go to my CommuteFaster.com energy page, CommuteFaster.com, click on the purple button in the right upper right-hand corner, and just look for a little box that says MIBs, and click on that, and that'll take you to the original story. But I'm not going to sit here and whine and snivel about my own problems. I'm going to play some real-life testimonies from other inventors to let you know what other guys have had to go through. So the first one I want to play is from a show that Sterling Allen did, interviewing Mike Brady, who's been doing some research on permanent magnet motors. He calls his the Perendev. And Mike got visited by some strange people. Let's hear what he had to say on Sterling's show.
We're doing a lot more than just magnet motors, which we do not advertise on the internet. But anybody interested can contact me and write to me, and I will then tell them what we're doing. I don't want to advertise it because it's dangerous, and I don't want strange people. We've had a lot of strange people here. I think from every single secret agency in the world has been to see me.
Mm-hmm. Actually knocking on the door or looking in the windows?
No, coming to see me, actually sitting down and talking. They come as businessmen and so on, but we know who they are.
Then the popular talk show host Jeff Rentz was interviewing John Bedini. John Bedini has been working with Colonel Tom Bearden in their own version of a permanent magnet motor. So let's give a listen to what, if I can find the right link here. Yeah, here we go. This is John Bedini describing his confrontation.
That's the Achilles heel of so-called modern science. Fear,
exactly.
Resentment, jealousy, I don't care what you call it.
See, you are going to pay no matter what you do for energy the rest of your life.
Right.
In 1984, when they slammed me against the wall and held me up against the wall, two big guys looked like they walked out of Vic Tanny's. You know what that is, right?
I remember that.
Yeah. And they hold you at gunpoint.
It's Gold's Gym now.
Yeah, Gold's Gym, right? And so, and they tell you you're going to buy gasoline the rest of your life. What can you say?
See,
They're going to just shoot you on the spot.
Whatever you guys want, that's fine with me.
Yeah, you can take their badge numbers, Jeff. You can
do it.
No. Yeah, and you know what? They're non-existent people. They're just some bruisers that are out there to stop all this.
There's a million of them, folks.
Oh, yeah, just tons of them.
Yeah.
Next, let's hear what a brilliant individual by the name of Stan Deo. If you've ever been to standeo.com, you know what topics he works with. He had the privilege of working with some of the classic top nuclear physicists that worked back in the Manhattan Project years ago, and then Stan Deo, considerably younger, came in later working with the same people. Stan Deo was interviewed in a movie that was made, I believe, somewhere in the mid-90s, and they had this short clip with Stan commenting about what he'd heard from people that he had actually worked with. So here's the short clip taken from that movie, so that's why there's some background music in it.
Even Dr. Townsend T. Brown, the electrophoretic research scientist, has on his 60-millimeter film of his lab test, which we've got here, he has guys with the black suits and black hats come into the test. You can see where the legends come from. I mean, these guys come in and they look like, you know, Bad Bart the Black Man. I mean, it's just, it's classic, and these things do happen.
There is no progressive science in a world where every scientific idea is evaluated for its military potential.
Power, or energy, and control of energy equals power in the new world order that is emerging. If you control the energy, the way we get around, the way we get electricity, the way we have our TVs and video cameras, if you do the control of the energy, then you've got control of the people.
Control of the people, that seems to be what it's all about here, is control, control, control. Not just profits. These guys are linked into international banking. They already have all the money in the world. They just want to control the population, or so it seems. So we see them picking on the new inventor that comes along with an idea and suddenly gets a confrontation. He's abruptly told to stop. And the MIBs sometimes claim to be government agents, sometimes they don't. I know in our own situation they appeared to be more mafia than government. But there is a similarity. Our own situation happened, I think, 30 days right after another inventor by the name of Bill Williams, who was working on a similar technology, had a confrontation of his own. Same modus operandi. New SUV, guys with guns, they approach you, rattle off names of close, intimate family members, and threaten to kill them if you don't stop what you're working on. There's too much continuity to the theme there. So we could give a knee-jerk reaction and blame oil. Well, maybe it's nuclear. Maybe it's one of the other power monopolies, coal or natural gas. I was very curious, had oil ever been caught red-handed stooping to murder, stooping to violent threats? Read history books on John D. Rockefeller, and you see he was a horrible businessman, just stomping out his competition ruthlessly. But I could never find any documentation of him actually pulling an Al Capone and hiring a murderer. I could not find any evidence on that. A gentleman by the name of Lindsay Williams wrote some books recently titled The Energy Non-Crisis. Now, Lindsay was originally and still is a Protestant pastor who had a unique situation back in the 70s of being called up to Alaska and act as the chaplain amongst all the workers there getting the Alaska pipeline run through. And Lindsay was invited right into the board of directors meetings there with Atlantic Richfield, ARCO. And he got an insider's view of just what goes on in the discussions of the top executives of the biggest oil companies in the world. This was a talk show. I fortunately managed to get a question called in myself. It was Erskine Overnight, plays on Genesis Communications Network, GCN Live, I think is their, GCNLive.com is their site. So anyway, I called in with this question. We'll just play you what Lindsay answered when I threw that very embarrassing question at him.
Now, let's go to Ken in California.
Okay, we're having trouble with the control panel. We'll try it one more time here.
Now, let's go to Ken in California. Ken, you're on with Lindsay Williams.
Yeah, hi, Erskine. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi, Ken.
Say, Lindsay, I've got a little more fuel to add to your fire. A close friend of mine just recently retired, working for about 30 years with Getty Oil. Getty is also sitting on an enormous holding in Central California. I don't know the exact numbers, but it could also support U.S. consumption for a number of years just with that one holding alone. But that's one of the two reasons I called. The other reason I wanted to ask you is I've been working with several friends on alternative energy, and we've always heard legends of this, but finally the rubber just hit the road, unfortunately, with a close friend of mine. Have you experienced any indication of the oil companies using literal physical violence to stop alternative energy?
Yes, there are many instances of this.
Okay, because, there's several different technologies in the works out there. I don't want to go into mine, but the one that we were working on, we were just about ready to complete. And a month and a half ago, my friend was just driving home from work, and he got run off the road by a black Lincoln Town car. Four thugs with automatic weapons jumped out, shoved him in his face, gave him the name of all his family members, and told him that if he didn't stop work on this alternative energy product, that he and all his associates would be killed.
They will allow no alternative.
That's not at all surprising, Ken. I had a phone call from a friend of mine in Utah who told that in 1934, you listening to that, 1934, there was a car, it was a Lincoln, not the one that went into there, but
yeah.
A Lincoln that was running on water. They put something in the water. They were able to run the car.
Yeah.
The Navy took him away, and they never saw him again.
Yeah.
1934, and he was there and saw it.
Okay, well, you've got somebody to trace. Most of those legends, it's hard to trace them down to the actual person, but I know the guy this happened to, and this happened only a month and a half ago. The thing I wanted to ask Lindsay here, though, everything I've read about the most vicious of oil men, John D. Rockefeller, is, yeah, he did a lot of dastardly business tactics, but I never saw any documentation of the guy actually stooping to murder. And it's looking like somebody now, and I'm suspicious of both oil. I'm also suspicious of the nuclear power industry. So I'm just
stay with us, Ken. We'll be right back. I want to talk with you some more. It was 1934. The Navy tested out a Lincoln automobile south of D.C. They put 1 gallon of water, set the carburetor. This guy put a little substance in the water. It started. It ran. They locked the guy into the Willard Hotel. Then they left. And then this friend of mine went over there, and there was no one in the room. I never saw him again. That's a story directly from the horse's mouth. Now, Ken, you're telling us that other times that people drove up, it was almost like a Men in Black type situation, beat the heck out of people, threatening, cajoling, and everything else. This is going on with the oil companies. That was the other question I was going to ask Lindsay. If they do crank up the oil to that price, are we not going to have alternatives come in, and are they not going to kill their golden goose at that point, Lindsay?
They are not going to allow alternatives to come in. They will stop them every way possible. They have chosen energy as a method of controlling the world. They will not they will not allow these things to happen. You know, you can have all of these hybrid cars you want to. You can try every method that you'd like to. You can use hydrogen, on and on you go. All of these things have already been proven to be done. They will not allow them, and the reason that they said that the United States will triple its current oil usage is because they know that they're not going to allow any alternative methods whatsoever. And the reason they said that all foreign oil will be cut off is because that's exactly what will happen at some point. Mark my words, these are buzzwords. Then they said, we can supply the entire United States of America for 150 years.
Let's go to Ken. You have anything else? And then we'll go to Roger real quick.
It was just I'm trying to figure out who the threat actually came from, because these were obviously hired mafia goons, and I'm trying to find out who hired them. And
remember, if you've listened to any of our programs that we did concerning the Kennedy assassination, it was the mafia hired by the CIA. So even if you've got going back to the first part, you may not have back to the second part who actually hired them. You understand?
Yeah, well put. Well put.
Good luck to you, Ken. Listen,
thank you, Ken.
So high-level executives will resort to violence with industrial competition. I'm sorry to say it gets even a little more sinister than that. Let's shift gears here and look at how Hollywood portrays the situation. Now, leave it to Hollywood to twist serious matters into humor and then make the ridiculous seem serious. I got to admit, two of the funniest movies in the last few years were the MIB series, The Men in Black, with the... I forgot his name now, Williams. Anyway... And Tommy Lee. Let me play a clip here from Men in Black 2. This is a loony opener that the viewers saw in this movie, MIB 2, released by Columbia Pictures. Pay close attention. There are hidden messages in this rather camp and silly opener. But listen to exactly what Peter Graves had to say in this.
Mysteries in History with your host, Peter Graves.
Although no one has ever been able to prove their existence, a quasi-government agency known as the Men in Black supposedly carries out secret operations here on Earth in order to keep us safe from aliens throughout the galaxies. Here is one of their stories that never happened from one of their files that doesn't exist. 1978. The leaders of Zartha flee their planet in order to escape the clutches of the evil Kylothian, Zerlina. Arriving on Earth, the Zarthans bring with them their greatest treasure, the light of Zartha. A cosmic force so powerful that in the wrong hands it could lead to the annihilation of Zartha. The Zarthans princess, Lorana, beseeched the Men in Black to hide the light from Zerlina. But they had no choice. Intervention would have meant the destruction of the Earth. However, in an act of galactic bravery, the Men in Black subdued Zerlina, allowing the Zarthans to escape so they might hide the light on another planet. Zerlina, released from her captors, vowed that the light would be hers and that she would destroy any planet that stood in her way. And so, never knowing what happened, the people of Earth were once again saved by a secret society of protectors known as the Men in Black.
Okay, so Hollywood claims that these MIB characters come from a secret society, yet neither movie approaches any initiation or sinister characteristic of the Men in Black themselves. They are always the good guys. Fighting those crazy illegal space aliens. There's a curious line in MIB 1 spoken by Tommy Lee. He portrayed these aliens as basically good creatures seeking a better life. Now, that's a righteous way to treat human aliens and refugees from poor countries, but let's look at a serious issue here. Hollywood in this film and many others portray strange creatures as if they were just another race of humans. Biblically, this is not true. If you study numerous alien abduction stories, you find a very sinister agenda behind all of them. The character of them revealed is identical to that of demonic entities mentioned several times in Judeo-Christian scripture. So Hollywood is presenting a scenario of a secret society being able to control these somewhat independent rabble-rousing entities. If you study the occult and Satan worship, you see the conjuring up of demonic entities is common. with the black-robed cult members claiming to be able to control the demons. They are seldom successful. When confronted with power beyond what they imagine, bizarre and dangerous things happen. But I'll put off details on that for my religion and politics show in the future. Now let's look at something reported on Steve Quayle's show, revealing that the MIB situation is a bit higher than just hired street thugs roughing up competition of new upstart inventors. Steve interviewed a gentleman that he knew personally, so that qualifies his veracity in the story he's about to tell. Let me play this first short clip that'll let you know what level of government security this gentleman is working with.
Well, now explain what you did there, and then explain how that affected your classification too, because I don't think people understand that everybody in the military does not have access to everything that's out there, but the guys that have to produce the reports that go to the generals and the different cabinet heads and the different elite, those are the people that got the reports that you prepared off of above top secret technology, correct?
That's correct. Well, I was technically given a top secret classification, but told that I was the only one at our headquarters location who had access or who was supposed to be viewing any of the material that would come across my desk because of its extreme classification. These were projects that very few people knew about, and I was to publish these, in high-quality documents for the military. Some things went to the White House, and others went to people. I have no idea who they were, but I got the impression after working there for several years that there was someone, some kind of a dark, shadowy government going on behind what we see, in our daily lives. And eventually I wound up turning in my resignation towards the end of the fifth year that I was there.
Now let's see what happened when he stumbled upon a classified technology that coincidentally was identical to the one that he had invented on his own, separate from his regular job. Naturally being curious, he checks out a book from his company's library, and, well, I'll let him tell the story here. It gets rather bizarre.
So go on and share the incident, because I got to tell you, when we first started talking and stuff, that's the one that kind of took me away, because I go into overdrive trying to figure it out.
What the situation with the free energy?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I was telling you that when I saw this flying saucer, I had wanted to figure out how in the world they did that. And I've always been curious, from the time I was a little kid, I took everything apart and wanted to find out how it worked, so I kept working on it until I started seeing some results. And I made a few test models that worked, kind of all right, but the magnets would break down within a day or two, and then the thing would stop running. Well, I came to the conclusion after several years of doing this that the dipole materials were just not going to work. And I thought, well, if there was, some way of making monopole materials,
Now explain what a monopole material is to the non...
Well, first of all, our mainstream science will tell you that it's impossible that monopoles exist, although through the last several decades here, they've discovered that they probably do exist, but they're rare. Now, a monopole is a particle that's expected to be about 200 to 300 times larger than an electron, and its mass. And like I say, it's very rare and only exists after a large amount of energy is released. And I thought, well, it's unlikely. But I kept up my research anyways, and I actually, when I started working for the Department of Defense, I used our company library to do a lot of my research, and I was looking for anything I could find on magnetic fields, in fact, in theory, you know, anything involved there. And one day I had just broken for lunch and I went down to the library and I came upon a book that I hadn't seen before. It was named High Energy Monopoles, you know, magnetic monopoles. And so I thought, wow, you know, I didn't know these. There was such a thing. You know, they say that it can't exist. And so I, you know, my curiosity caused me to check out the book. I took it home, and I started reading through it, and had all these formulas for high energy monopole materials. And I couldn't believe what I was reading. I had to read it through about three times before I realized this is real. You know, I'm reading it right.
In other words, what you had thought and postulated or hypothecated,
right,
you found that they did exist.
I found that was it.
That they had achieved that ability to make those monopole magnets.
Exactly.
Okay.
And not only should you be able to make a free energy permanent magnet generator, but you could probably, you know, get free energy any other number of ways, according to, you know, these the many theories that scientists have out there, if they're any good at what they do, I guess. But anyway, so I took this book to the Department of Energy, and you know, I set up an appointment within the next couple of days, and I took a witness with me, you know, to witness what happened between me and the commissioner. And I told him what I had. I showed him my sketches and drawings, and then he said, well, it's not possible. It would be if there was such a thing as high-energy monopoles, but you got your information wrong, blah, blah, blah. And in the middle of his speech, I handed him the book open to the chapter on high-energy monopoles. And he said, what's this? And I said, well, this is a book. It's I got it from the library at this place where I work, which is a well-known contractor. And he said, no, this can't be right. And I said, well, read it as many times as you need to convince yourself, you know, that it's that this can't be. I said, because I did the same thing. And he read it again, and his eyes just grew about the size of silver dollars. And he said, oh, my God, man, do you realize what you have here? And I said, yes, I do, sir. I said, but you're about the only other person that seems to be, you know, understanding what I'm talking about here. And so he got the company on the phone. I mean, they had the company where you get these materials, you know, who makes them and everything else. And I had talked to them before trying to obtain the materials, and they told me, well, you got your information wrong, you know, maybe on Mars, and just treating me, you know, like I was an idiot. And so he called them up. And he asked for these materials, and they gave him the same line that they didn't exist, and, you know, he's got his information wrong. And he said, I'm going to ask you once again, and after that, I'm going to file a lawsuit against you, your company, and everybody I can there, you know, if you don't sell me these materials, because, you know, I have my rights, you know, I'm an American citizen, I'm the energy commissioner, you know, for the state I was living in at the time. And the guy said, oh, I'm sorry, sir, I didn't realize who I was talking to. And he said, okay, you know, what do you want? Yes, we do make those here. And we proceeded to order these materials. Well, that was it, I thought. And the next day, when I arrived for work, first thing in the morning, I've got military, you know, MPs standing at my desk with their hands on their pistols telling me that, you know, asking me, where's the book? And I said, what book? Which book, you know? And they said, you know. And I said, on the high-energy monopole materials? And they said, yes, you know. And apparently a temp worker or some other, you know, temporary worker had filled in for the full-time librarian and was supposed to put new top-secret folders on these books and have them placed in the vault. And somehow this book had wound up on the shelf, you know, in the regular library.
Do you think someone had access to it ahead of time, put it there, you know, that understood the ramifications?
Ooh, I doubt it.
Or it was just basically research that, you know, it was so, and when I say boring, obviously you
mm-hmm.
understand.
It was extremely boring and scientific,
okay.
You know.
Yeah, well, and, you know, a lot of stuff is boring and scientific. Evidently, the Chinese don't think so because they copy everything that
yeah.
there is.
Yeah.
But, you know, most people don't.
Yeah. Well, I think it was probably an honest mistake, you know. But, you know, a lot of people don't realize what that would mean. And anyway, so then they proceeded to threaten my life and told me that they would probably take my entire family just for good measure, quote, you know, and not that as if I ever spoke to anyone or told anyone about, you know, what had occurred there, that they would do just that. And if I doubted their word, just try them out. And so for the last 27 years, up until about a year and a half, 2 years ago, I kept my mouth shut and I didn't talk about anything. And I've had them checking up on me all throughout the time since I've left there. They immediately put a helicopter over my house, which hovered approximately 50 to 100 feet above my house for the next 2 months. And just the general harassment, you know, letting me know that they were watching and that they were very serious about their threats. And tapped my phone, had my every family member's phone tapped, visited my friends, the men in black that you hear about, you know, went to every friend that they knew that I had, you know, close friend, and told them, you stay away from him and don't talk to him anymore, don't have anything to do with him, you know, because we're watching you.
Yeah, and without, let me interrupt this, without telling where it came from, explain a certain email that you got, just the threat, not who sent it.
Mm-hmm. Well, they just, I've gotten a number of threatening emails from a number of different people within our government, but he told me this particular person, everybody knows who he is, but I'm not going to mention his name. He told me, stop what you're doing or else. And as soon as I closed that email, my computer went down. It was a brand new computer, shut down, and when I tried to restart it, it reformatted the whole hard drive. I lost everything that I had on my computer. So it was some type of a bomb, you know. And I didn't even think such a thing was possible, but apparently it is, you know, embedded right in the text, I guess. So.
Well, listen to this email. How timely. Ken from California says this, Steve, every inventor who comes close to completing a true free energy technology suddenly meets with men in black, these are his words,
mm-hmm.
who threaten their lives. It happened to a close friend of mine. By the way, this came in at 5:43 before you said men in black. I'm
sure.
Watching my digital atomic clock, you know.
Uh-huh.
You started talking about it at 5:46. So 3 minutes before men in black, Ken is writing about men in black, and then he says, please ask your guests if these are true black op government agents. And the answer to that is they're men in black.
Yes, there are men in black. And even CIA are terrified of these guys. They're, like I say, some shadow sector of our government and military. And they seem to be above the law. I've got a lot of friends that are ex-CIA. NSA, and just made a new friend here, Homeland Security Administration. But, you know, these guys are there. They all know it. And, you know, like your listener says, they do exist. And this is what happens if anybody does come up with a true free energy technology.
So now we hear testimony from inside a classified operation that even they are intimidated by these mysterious men in black from who knows where. Who could possibly intimidate the highest levels of the military, the CIA, or NSA? For that matter, how could they even get access to a classified area? I've worked in classified areas. Those places are surrounded by guns. You have to show the right identification. They question who you are just showing up for work. There's no facial identification to get into the job. You have to have the right credentials with you, period. This is where you have to learn about true secret societies who actually have infiltrated every government and large corporation on the planet. I've been studying the research by the likes of Dr. Dennis Cuddy, Dr. Stan Monteith, and Anthony Sutton for years. I recently learned of this next scholar, a Dr. Walter Veith, V-E-I-T-H, and one of his several highly informative video lectures are now posted on the Internet. Just go to Google and just punch in his last name, V-E-I-T-H, and you'll find him. From these videos he's produced, I found these two absolutely frightening quotes. I have them excerpted here from his Secret Society lecture series. He spends over an hour developing solid evidence of how the Vatican is structured from its inception through today, and then how it was infiltrated by several secret societies many years ago. This has created a two-headed monster that gives conflicting messages to all who mistakenly think it is merely a religious organization representing Christianity. Nothing could be further from the truth. The lower-powered societies around the world have concentrated their power as you climb up in various levels of each society. They've concentrated their power into two organizations at the top inside the Vatican. The Knights of Malta are essentially the military ground troops who answer directly to the Jesuits. So you've got two groups to pay attention to here in what he's about to say, the Knights of Malta and the Jesuits. So let's listen to what Dr. Veith had to uncover from his extensive research in this matter. Let me get the right clip going here. Here we go.
So let's look at the Knights of Malta. The Freemasons are in the foreground, the Jesuits and their Knights of Malta are in the background. Here is, headquartered in Rome, the Knights of the Papal Caesar control banking, industry, military complexes of the world. They oversee Chase Manhattan Bank with branches in Moscow and New York. This is the Knights of the Maltese Cross. This is the quote. By the way, the cardinal in control of the Knights of Malta in New York is also the cardinal of the armed forces of the United States of America. Isn't that fascinating? Now, here's a misnomer for you. When the war broke out there in Iraq, Pope John Paul II condemned the war. But the head of the Knights of Malta, the cardinal in your country, went along on the aircraft carrier to bless the soldiers in their efforts. Now, isn't that a twin doctrine sent out into the world? I think it's very peculiar. And one wouldn't understand it. So St. Patrick's Cathedral is the seat of the Archbishop of New York, Edward M. Egan. It's the largest decorated Gothic-style Catholic cathedral in the United States. And that's where he resides. That was Cardinal Spellman during the war years, Cardinal O'Connor, and the present one, Edward M. Egan. Here are some of the members of the Knights of Malta. And if you look at the names, they make interesting reading. You have Charles Joseph Bonaparte and Pat Buchanan. Some of the names might ring a bell. Prescott Bush Jr. That's interesting. And Giscard d'Estaing. Well, that's the French leadership. Dulles. Ooh, that has to do with powerful systems within the country. Edward Egan, of course. Flanagan, Flynn, General Alexander Haig. Very interesting. Himmler was a Knights of Malta. That's fascinating. Ted Kennedy. Oh, that's interesting. Henry Luce, the founder of the great publishing magnates of this country. And so we could go on and on and on. Franz von Papen, the delegate that was sent by the Vatican to uplift and support Adolf Hitler. He was a Knights of Malta. Very interesting reading. And so you have interesting people. Oh, even Frank Sinatra was part of them.
But even more powerful than the Knights of Malta are the Jesuits, founded by Ignatius Loyola, of eventually Loyola University fame. Listen to what power that group already had, back in the 1700s, kind of sends shivers up and down your spine. Listen to this quote.
So let's look at the Knights of Malta. The Freemasons are in the foreground, the Jesuits and their Knights of Malta are in the background. Now, this is Ignatius Loyola himself writing, and he said, "The power of the general shall be so unlimited that should he deem it necessary for the honor of God, he shall even be able to send back or in other directions those who have come direct from the popes." So the Jesuits have absolute control within the Roman Catholic system. To this day, the Pope's confessor must be a Jesuit priest. This is an interesting quote. This is Michelangelo Tamburini, 1720, general of the Jesuits, speaking to the Duke of Brancas. It's in the quote from the History of the Jesuits, and he said the following, "See, my lord, from this room I govern not only Paris, but China. Not only China, but the whole world, without anyone knowing how it is managed." That's an interesting statement. That was in 1720. We know that the Jesuits had gone to every single country in the world, including the United States. The famous Jesuit de Smet was very, very prominent in the history of this country and some of the organizations that formed under his leadership. Here is the quote. "The Vatican Empire, which states that the Pope's confessor and ordinary priest must be a Jesuit. He must visit the Vatican once a week at a fixed time, and he alone may absolve the Pope of his sins." So who is higher, the one who is being absolved or the one who absolves?
Paris and China, the Vatican is boasting, well, the Jesuits within the Vatican is boasting of controlling Paris and China in the 1700s. Regardless of what the religion was in China, the Vatican had already infiltrated the government in China back then. Now, if you read the works of Anthony Sutton, Dennis Cuddy, and a few other doctors, excellent historians, you'll see Rockefeller money was involved in bringing Mao Zedong to power. You'll also see that there was a lot of Wall Street money financing Hitler, and also financing Joseph Stalin. Now, what are these tyrants doing getting American money? I thought Rockefeller was a big American oil tycoon here, right? Well, there's something kind of weird about that family. John D. Rockefeller was a 33rd degree Mason. That's where his loyalty was at, was his through his secret manipulations of the business world is really how he acquired his wealth. He was at the right place at the right time, just when America and the world needed a new energy source. So I'll grant that as just kind of dumb luck. But as far as how he manipulated business, no, it was secret handshakes and rather sinister deals in the background. But let's look at the Vatican now. Who pulls the strings now? A person by the name of Leo Zagami was an insider aristocrat with family bloodlines that got him very high up inside the Vatican and numerous secret societies. Eventually, he had enough of what evil he had witnessed, and he just bailed out. He said, these guys are crazy, and they're just pure evil, and he wouldn't have anything more to do with them. The last straw for him was that shortly after he got married, the Vatican asked him to do something to sabotage and backstab his wife's family, and he said, "That's the last straw. I'm out of here." Leo has a strange theological background, of course, being raised Catholic up high in the Vatican, and then he bailed out and, of all things, became a Muslim. So I'm certainly not endorsing his theology, but the man experienced some eyewitness reports that you do have to give him some credence for. He's gone public on several talk shows now, spilling the beans on what he has witnessed and telling it as fast as he can, and that is his way of trying to remain safe and alive. By becoming a public figure, he hopes that this will save his life from assassination. So let's listen to what he says the Vatican uses for their spiritual and physical guides nowadays. He made this remark in an interview by Dr. Gianni Hayes on the American Voice Network. And you'll hear Leo speak here, and he has a thick Italian accent, so you have to pay close attention to what he says, but you'll hear a familiar name. Here we go.
What about the Black Pope, Kaltenbach? What is his role?
His role is the spiritual guide of the New World Order. Then you have the materialistic guides of the New World Order, the Rothschilds, the Rockefeller. But then you have the spiritual guide, which is, you know, the Black Pope. So it's a pyramid, it's a hierarchy with a very close, then you have the Knights of Malta. So you have a very good hierarchy that goes right up to the Pope.
Right, so
but obviously the Jesuits have most control over the spiritual part because they have control also over all the black magic within the Vatican.
In the 4 hours of Leo Zagami interviews that Gianni Hayes did, he also went on to describe Vatican priests conjuring up demons and trying to control them. But unlike the Hollywood movies, men in black robes don't control these alien entities. The entities control them. Every country on Earth has some kind of diplomatic relation with the Vatican, some more than others. So returning to an earlier question, who is higher than the military or three-letter agencies? Who could possibly intimidate them? We see from direct testimony from Leo Zagami, who was the highest insider ever to defect from that level of the Illuminati. We see it's all controlled from there. And they can subcontract anyone they want to manipulate anything. Leo went on to point out who some of the top leaders are in sinister operations and where they meet. As people climb up in various levels in secret societies, I think most everybody know that the Scottish Rite Masons have 33 levels. I don't know what it is for Shriners. And the Knights of Malta, Knights of Columbus, Knights of et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They all have varying degrees that you can climb up into. And Leo says that as various individuals prove their mettle or prove that they can't handle the sinister stuff, they can get shoved into a side order, is what he called it, and kind of pushed aside. But once they get up into the highest of levels, then they start to congregate in one location and socialize with the highest levels of other organizations. Leo says the one location where they tend to meet at is at the P2 Lodge in Monte Carlo. Now, we've heard of the Bilderbergers and the Bohemian Grove Group. Those, admittedly, are world leaders, and there's certainly nothing good going on there. But as far as calling the shots, as the sinister group in the background, from what I've learned here from all these PhD historians, this is not me just combing spooky websites. This is from PhD historians, people. Listen to who originated all these claims I've made tonight. It appears to be concentrated inside the Vatican. Two levels, Knights of Malta and Jesuits. And then culminating with two flip-flop freaks at the top, one always wearing white, one always wearing black. That's the Black Pope and the White Pope. If you look at the current White Pope's background, he's got some pretty ugly, embarrassing things in his background, not the least of which is him hiding child pedophilia cases. So that's, as near as I can tell, that is the sinister power group back there. But why are they attacking new energy inventors is the question. Well, as Leo said, who is their top physical guide that they're listening to? It's David Rockefeller. Do you think Rockefeller, Mr. Oil for the world, is going to say anything nice about new clean energy and lose his power structure? Not in your life. The other rhetorical question I'm going to toss out here just before I close that we all have to ask ourselves, as you're growing up, child, and approaching maturity, you realize that there are matters in life that we just cannot control ourselves. We can't control when the sun comes up and when the moon goes down and vice versa and such. There are things that are just out of our control. Shucks, I hit on that frequently on my website on the subject of global warming. No, it's not a lot of SUVs, people. It's solar flares from the sun. There's more energy in one solar flare out of the sun than we have total oil on this planet. So that's where the excess heat is coming from. And the sun's been going through some strange cycles of late. But as we grow up and get mature enough to realize that we cannot control things like that, that is under divine control, and that's where religion comes in. And this is not my religion and politics show. I just want to acknowledge that it's basic human nature to seek the creator of the universe for answers and not try to answer it yourself, because spooky things always pop up that you don't expect. And as I've been repeating over and over again here, the biggest shock in my life last year has been I'm working on something that I thought was going to save the world and bring another clean energy technology to market. And up comes an MIB confrontation, and I wonder, what the flip is going on here? I didn't hurt anybody. Where are these guys showing up for? What's their agenda? The problem is secret societies have acquired enormous power corporately and in government. And the embarrassing matter now, this is where religion ties in, and this is a serious question I have to leave open-ended now as we close. Who controls the church you go to? I don't care if you are Baptist or Catholic. We've already seen some problems in the Catholic Church here. There's a lot of Masonic Freemason pastors in Baptist churches and in Methodist churches and in Lutheran churches. The Jews won't admit it, but the Jews have been infiltrated by a group called the Sabbateans. The list of these secret societies that are very sinister in nature have infiltrated all the religions on this planet. Folks, stop and think. Who controls the religion that you go to on Friday, Saturday, or Sunday to worship the creator of the universe, whoever you want to call him? I'm a born-again Christian myself. I believe in the Lord Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. But whoever you worship, ask yourself this final question: who controls my religion? Is it the God of the universe that we are supposedly worshiping once a week? Or has sinister forces infiltrated even my own church? Thanks for tuning in.